Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer.
When you buy a beautiful new Westinghouse television set, like this table model, for instance, in a handsome mahogany cabinet with a huge 17-inch screen, or perhaps you prefer a console, like this Westinghouse Brentwood, with the extra-large speaker for better sound. But whichever style and model you prefer, you're going to want a Westinghouse.
I assure you, it wasn't intentional to follow up a show on podcasting with a show on making videos. Basically, it's like doing a show on TV after doing a show on radio. The thing is, I gave the last show a higher priority because it was a listener request and because, quite honestly, my listeners rule. So, this was the show you should have gotten last time, and it's born out of the real life, you see? As things go, my library got a few new things over the last few weeks, and it required a bit of staff training. I work for a library district that's spread over an area that's bigger than a few East Coast states. That's not bragging, because there's nothing to brag about when you're driving from one end of the county to the other and it takes you more than 2 hours. When you're covering that kind of distance, you really need to think about the best way to get training and information out without spending 3 or 4 days going from branch to branch simply to deliver the same message. Thankfully, there's a really easy way to get a message out in a way that people will understand, and in a manner they can easily and quickly review as needed. It takes a little time, but you can fire up your creativity and deliver something fun and useful that will at least get that conversation started. After all, it doesn't take as much work as you might think to make a video and upload it to YouTube. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, Episode 20, Video Killed the Staff Training Star. I'm Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian. Welcome you back to the show that explores the intersection of libraries and technology. And hey, welcome to the 20th episode of the show. Wow, 20 episodes, man. Who knew? According to a site I looked up on the internet, if this were an anniversary, we'd have to get each other some china or platinum or something. Either way, thank you for sticking with me, and if you're new, hey, welcome to the show. As you might have guessed from the intro there, we're going to talk about making some staff training videos, and maybe some videos for the public too. It all kind of depends on your focus and your audience. And how it's not only easier than you might think, it's a great way to get information out to a group of people spread over a wide area. Now then, I want to do something that I've certainly done before, and break the show into two parts. I know. But I think it's important because, hey, there are a couple of things you need to think about when you're approaching the idea of making a training video. Because this show really isn't about suspense or withholding information. I'll tell you what those things are right now. Number one, the design and feel of the video. Look, this is actually the most important part of the whole thing, besides, of course, the thing which you're offering training about. Contrary to popular belief, or at least popular practice, training videos don't have to be cheesy, dumb, or pandering to a childish mentality. Unless, of course, you're making videos for children, I suppose. We'll talk about knowing your audience and creating a video that's actually somewhat entertaining, which will make folks want to watch it. Not only that, though, want to watch subsequent videos. After all, if you make a good couple of training videos, when the third one comes out, if people thought the first two were good, they'll probably want to watch the third. Number two, the tools you'll need. Now, you know who I am, and you know what this show is about. There are a bevy of free and open source tools out there to make yourself a training video worth watching. If you have a budget, though, there are some expensive and less expensive things you can get too, which will make it that much better. Now, what you use isn't as important as what you make, because hammers and saws and rasps and planes, these are all the tools of a woodworker, but just because you have those tools at your disposal doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make beautiful cabinetry. So, The tools that you use aren't as important as what you can do with them and what you make with them. And we'll have a look at those later in the show. But first, no matter if you're using a FOSS editor or Final Cut Pro, you need to make something worth watching. And hopefully, something that doesn't wind up becoming an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 when you send it out to the staff.
Kay thought she would like that sort of work.
Kay was wrong.
She could see herself at the center of a world made up of large ovens
and large white-haired ladies.
By professional cooks. Gee, what would Mom think of a grocery list like this?
She'd laugh.
For anyone with training in institution management, though, it's just like planning the family.
Yes, that's
dinner.
Right. I said a full case of vodka.
So I'm a big believer in making learning entertaining. Heck, that's why I do podcasts instead of lectures, and even when I'm doing some in-person training, I keep things light and humorous. I've been a staff and public instructor in libraries for 13 years now, and I know how hard it is for many librarians and other information professionals to sit through a class on the finer points of an ILS, or how to best use a database, or welcome to our new cash handling system, won't this be fun? Well, actually it can be fun. You have to acknowledge that what you're teaching has an incredibly limited audience, and that's the first part of creating an interesting video. You need to know your audience. Now then, I don't know your audience, but I could probably make a few guesses based on mine. You'll be training information professionals, many of which have some sort of college degree. They're busy, probably overworked, and have far better things to do with their day than listen to you. They have a limited amount of time for training, and it's not going to be enough for them, so you're going to have to come up with ideas to make sure you hit the high points, the important stuff, and then offer opportunities for follow-up later on. And by later on, I mean possibly weeks from now. But you'll have an opportunity to present your information, and if you can make it somewhat memorable, then that not only helps your staff, but you too. So the thing you'll need to do before whipping up a training video is, not surprisingly, figure out what it is you want to teach. That sounds obvious, but you'd be surprised at how many videos I've sat through where I wish the person would simply get to the freaking point and then discovering that maybe there wasn't a point after all. That's not good. The next thing you need to consider is time, and this works hand in hand with your topic. People often look at me like I'm mad when I say a good training video should be about 5 minutes long, certainly no longer than 10. It should be long enough for a staff member to watch during their break time and leave them a few minutes to throw away their empty can of soda and use the bathroom. But Dan, my topic is more lengthy than that. I'm going to have to take a good half hour to teach it. Fine. Here's the next thing to consider and do. Make multiple videos. Break your topic down and write your script to make multiple videos that are around 5 minutes long. Keep in mind, you're presenting new information. Chances are you're not really offering a lecture series anyway. If you are, then quite frankly, a video series may not be what you need. But if you can break the topic apart and present those topics separately, building on each video as you go, then that's excellent. Half an hour? Fine. Make 4 to 6 shorter videos that they can watch over the course of a couple days if needed. Oh, and that reminds me, a script. Write one. It could be a short set of notes. It could be a Shakespearean production. I don't really recommend Shakespearean training styles. But a script not only lays out what you're going to teach, but it makes sure you hit the points that you want to hit, what order, and what you want to say about them. You'll especially need one if you're working with another person in the video. Now, design. Well, design is an interesting thing. Do you want to be on camera or not? Do you need a quote-unquote personality, as they would say in television. In other words, a host. How in-depth will you go? You need to consider things like this, especially with multiple videos. So, here's the deal. I've done some training videos recently, and they fell into two different styles that work pretty well. I'm going to link to them in the show notes that you find at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. The first kind of video was used when we updated our ILS, or Integrated Library System, for the non-librarian listeners out there. The ILS basically runs the library, for the most part allowing us to do everything from checking things out, to cataloging, to billing and purchasing, and so on. Because we're spread over such a wide area, we decided to do some videos about the major changes on the front desk. These training videos were pretty easily and quickly done because we were on a strict timetable. The upgrade was coming on a specific date, and we needed the information out before that. So we broke the changes into several categories and simply made multiple videos about them. These videos are basically screencasts, or videos of what you see on a screen as you do something. I provide some voiceover to explain what's going on and how things work, but you never see me. This is a pretty traditional way of teaching something that's technical in nature, and the screencast still excels at that. Here's the thing. Here's how it works. That's what a screencast is. Yeah, here's the thing. Here's how it works. And you just show them. It's pretty simple, but it's still very effective. Another type of video that I like is the explanatory video, which I've linked in the show notes as well. A staff member at a branch asked a question about television devices, you know, Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, stuff like that. We'd recently added Hoopla to our retinue of services, so it was a good question, but it would have taken something like a 5-page-long email to answer it, and the answer would have gone back to him. Or, I decided, I could make a 5-minute video where I explained the question, offered commentary on the devices, and provided some informational value for everyone. The video took maybe an hour and a half to make, all told. That was from writing a quick script, to shooting, to editing, to finalizing, and then uploading it to YouTube and sending out the email about the video to the whole staff. As you'll see, it's more of a vlog. It's almost like a show, and that's intentional. Shows and vlogs are far more entertaining than boring training videos where you have a trainer droning on like Ben Stein.
Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the, anyone, the Great Depression, passed the, anyone, the tariff bill, the Hawley-Smoot...
There's a reason Ben Stein was funny in Ferris Bueller, because we've all had classes like that. You have little idea what the teacher is talking about, and they're certainly not making you care about their topic either. So the vlog is a good way to get an unfamiliar topic across and make it somewhat fun. Finally, let's talk consistency. You need to stick to a consistent format, especially if you're doing a series of videos. My videos about the ILS were all screencasts with voiceover, right? It'd have been really weird and jarring to the staff if I had stuck a vlog-style video in there and then went back to the screencasts later. Find a format that works for your topic. Sometimes that format will be a screencast, sometimes it will be a vlog, sometimes it will be a person standing in front of a table full of widgets. But whatever it is, keep it consistent across the topic. You can switch formats and design from topic to topic, but for a given series, keeping that format streamlined and consistent will help your audience learn about the topic without these weird transitions from style to style. There are tons of training and tutorial videos all over YouTube, and I'll link to a few of them in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Have a look at those and others. You're not working in a vacuum here. Get some ideas from others, and hey, incorporate them into your production.
Representing yet another great accomplishment of the UAC, the Series 3 plasma gun is an extremely versatile medium-range combat weapon. Harnessing the exhaustive resources of synthetic plasma, the plasma gun meets the critical requirement of low-cost...
And toys and software, oh my. Video editing takes time, and that's just the very nature of it. I suggest that for a given video where you need quick turnaround from editing to production of a final video, you're looking at roughly 3 minutes of editing for every minute of video. That's the quick turnaround. Do you want something better than quick? Well, then that time goes up. However, expect to spend about 15 minutes editing a 5-minute video, but that assumes something. That assumes that you know how to edit a video and you know the software you're working with to do it. If you don't, well, it's beyond the scope of this podcast to teach you those skills. However, as I've said before, there are a ton of videos out there to give you tutorials, step-by-step, and all kinds of help with different video editors. Google is your friend, and I still Google the occasional problem to see if there's a creative and good solution for it. So, let's start with what I use, and we can move on from there. As a slider, I prefer to work on the platform that I think is best for a given job. If I'm fiddling about with the ILS, I want Windows and Windows Server. If I'm prototyping a web thingy, then Linux is my jam. But folks, when you need an audiovisual and multimedia creative station, OS X is where it's at. It's got the tools and it's got the flow to make video and audio editing a breeze once you learn the workflow. For my training videos, I used iMovie. Sure, I have access to Final Cut Pro, but you know what? iMovie does the job just as well, and it comes with OS X, so that kind of makes it free. Free as in I had to buy a Mac to get it. However, if you have access to an Apple workstation, I think you'll be able to do everything you want with iMovie. Just remember, you're making a training video for your staff or public. You're not trying to shoot the next Oscar award-winning movie. For audio needs, I bounce between Audacity and GarageBand. For most of my videos, though, I can handle much of the audio editing in iMovie, too. After all, if I just need to trim something, well, that can be done in iMovie. Do I just need to adjust the volume to fade in and out at the end or beginning of a clip? Well, that's doable too. If I need some real audio editing, chances are it's Audacity first and GarageBand second. But let's back up a second and take a look at how I get the footage. On the couple of training videos that I'm linking in the show notes, I used a couple of different things to gather footage and shoot the video. For the vlogging style video that's there, I used a Logitech C510 HD webcam. It's a 720p, and there are 1080p webcams out there if you want to roll the full HD thing, but 720p HD, that works just fine. They're both about the same price, though, so if you're buying a new camera, heck, get the 1080. Why not? I mean, they're both about $50. I pop some links in the show notes to the one that I use and the one that's a step up from that. The webcams are easy as heck to use. You just plug them in. Depending on the software to capture the video, that may be all you have to do. Most of them come with their own software that may or may not be good or bad or whatever. The Logitech stuff is okay, but I don't really use it, and you don't really even need a driver. Webcams are a standard, and they work on pretty much everything. Me, I simply use QuickTime to capture the video. Once again, it comes with OS X, and you're ready to shoot with a couple of mouse clicks. For audio, I use my podcast mic. Now then, I'm excited to say that I literally, probably an hour ago, just ordered a Blue Yeti, which is a professional-grade USB microphone. It'll be here after I record this, so you're hearing what may be the last episode of the show on a Rockband USB mic, also known as the Red Octane. Now, before you drop $114 US on a professional mic, Listen to the videos and listen to this podcast and ask yourself, is that good enough? Because if it is, then pay $10 to $20 for one of these Red Octane USB mics and you're good to go. Everything hooks together through QuickTime, so that makes it super easy to shoot when you need to. You might have to set all of your inputs in QuickTime the first time you use it. You know, you'll have to tell it what your HD webcam is, because it'll probably want to use a built-in camera on your MacBook, and not your, you know, not your good web camera. You'll probably have to tell it which microphone to use, too. Make sure those are set before you hit record, and it saves them, so you should only have to set them once. And record from a webcam in a similar way with Windows Movie Maker. You can even do basic editing in Movie Maker, and that just may be your one-stop shop for your shooting needs. Using Linux? Look at Kazam and Cheese. Kazam recently added the ability to do webcam recording, along with its screencasting abilities, which we'll talk about here in a second. And Cheese is almost the de facto webcam utility for many distributions of Linux. Links are in the show notes, my friends. For the screencasts, well, you have choices. If you want the full array of options like you see used in the Polaris training video, what you're looking at there is Camtasia Studio. Camtasia is screencasting at a pro level, and you can do all kinds of things with it. My library is great to supply me with a license for it, so I use that to shoot the screencasting stuff that you see in those videos. It does the pan and zoom, and it'll do callouts and arrows and circles on the screen, stuff like that. That's all available in the package, but that package costs around $100. Don't have the cred for that? Well, no worries. Allow me to turn you on to Cam Studio. Cam Studio, not Camtasia Studio, this is Cam Studio, is a Windows screencasting tool, and while it doesn't have the bells and whistles of Camtasia Studio, it works just fine. And it's free. I've used it many times before to do screencasts of ILS and website training videos, and I still would be if I didn't have free access to Camtasia. It's a very good program. On the Mac side, you can roll great screencasts with, guess what, QuickTime. I've met plenty of OS X fans who think that QuickTime is only a media player. No. Launch that puppy and click on the file menu and you will see that you can record video, screencasts, and even audio with QuickTime. You can get Camtasia for Mac, but seriously, I bet QuickTime does what you need. It might not do what you want, though, so take a look at both. On the Linux side of things, there are a couple of good options. I've used Record My Desktop before, that's all one word, Record My Desktop, and it's a solid bit of kit. Like Cam Studio, it's lacking all the bells and whistles and blinking lights of Camtasia, but it'll do that job dead bang. It can also record your audio from your microphone via jack or ALSA, so you can voice your casts just like you can on Cam Studio or QuickTime. I've dropped some links to Record My Desktop and a discussion on Ask Ubuntu about screencasting for Linux, and that has several more ideas for you to look at. Finally, editors. Wow. So, video editors run the gamut from professional grade to why bother. I'm going to assume that, like me, you're not looking for a pro editor package. You need something easy but fairly powerful to get the job done. So, like I said, I use iMovie on the Mac. It's great. If you want to step up to Final Cut Pro, well, that's fine, but I'd use iMovie for a couple of videos at the least, just to see if you're really lacking anything. On Windows, you have Windows Movie Maker, and there's not a thing wrong with it. Granted, it doesn't have some of the options you might want in a video editor, but for the price, which is free, it's a useful tool. If you want something a bit more powerful that's also free, but it's got a higher learning curve, there's Avidimux. It's an open source video editor that works on Windows, Mac, and Linux. It'll take you some time to learn, but it's fairly solid, and it gives you a world of options not available in Windows Movie Maker. If you have some money you can spend, $70 gets you Corel Video Studio Pro for Windows. I still use Video Studio Pro occasionally, and I still can't recommend it highly enough to my Windows users. It's simple, but it's feature-rich. Indeed, it's a very full-featured setup for only $70. For the price, you'll never beat it. On Linux, Avidimix is good, but I think Kden Live is better. I've used Kden Live to do entire shows, and it's got an interface and workflow very similar to Corel Video Studio. Now then, you might guess from the name that Kden Live, which is short for KDE Nonlinear Video Editor, is aimed at KDE desktop users. It'll work in other environments on Linux, you'll just need to download the libraries for it. If you're using KDE already, then you're using my favorite Linux DE, and Kden Live is excellent within KDE. There are others like OpenShot, but I've had limited success with OpenShot. It was a bit crashy last time I used it. However, I have to confess that it's been a little while since I've used it, and it's been under some serious development recently, so things may have improved. Check it out too, because it works on Linux, and they're working to get it set up on Windows and OS X as well. Now, of course, there are better editors out there, if you have some money to throw around. I've already mentioned Corel Video Studio for Windows, but if you think you really need the upper tier Let's Buy Something editor, then you're looking at three pretty good choices. One, Final Cut Pro 10. For the Mac, this is the top tier video editor. There have been Hollywood films cut together in Final Cut Pro. Currently it's selling for $300. I've used it, and it's freaking amazing. It's also far more than what I need most of the time. It's like driving your Lamborghini Diablo to the convenience store. It'll definitely get you there, but you know, your bicycle will probably do the job just as well. Number two, Adobe Premiere. For Windows and Mac, there's Premiere, and this too is industry-grade, pro-level software. You'll find Premiere in the studios of major online video makers and within the editing studios of television broadcasters. It's only available through a Creative Cloud subscription, which, if you just want to get Premiere, is $20 a month or $240 a year. Adobe is more than happy to sell you bigger packages for more money, though, so check my links in the show notes and you can learn more that way. Number three, Sony Vegas. Do you watch YouTube? If you do, chances are you've seen plenty of things edited with Sony Vegas. They've got several different SKUs on this one, so that's a bit annoying. And the packages range from $50 to $800. Naturally, the more expensive, the more features you'll see. Look around in the $150 to $200 range if you're looking for something for your library or even for yourself. That will probably do what you need it to do. Links in the show notes, of course. Now then, there's a dark horse here too, at least in the form of a video editor that I've not used, but I've seen getting rave reviews all over the web. It's called CyberLink Power Director, and Tom's Guide gives it first place. It's also on sale for $75 right now, but even without the sale, it retails at around $200. That's still well below its expensive competitors above. And the only reason I can't recommend it is because, personally, I've never used it, so I can't tell you if it's good or bad just from my own experience. But looking at the reviews, I can tell you that it's probably worth checking out. So have a look into that. But before we get out of here, let me remind you that the tools are only the tools. What you do with them makes the video your own. And what makes it something that your staff and your public will want to watch. So get the tools that work best for you and then use them to make awesome things. And hey, if a certain tool doesn't work, start looking around and you know, you can always drop me a line and maybe we can go back and forth and help each other. Got some contact information coming up here in just a bit as we're about to shut this episode down. And hey, that about wraps up the 20th episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in. Hope you picked up some ideas, some tips and tricks for making some training videos or, you know, even entertainment videos for your staff, for your public, and for whoever else might want to see a video. Video is kind of where it's at right now, but that's not a big surprise. After all, two of the biggest sites on the internet are YouTube and Netflix, and what do those two sites have in common? Well, video, of course. So, hope you picked up something useful. The song you're currently digging on is Daydreaming by Starman65. I picked that up at Jamendo.com. Jamendo, like my often-touted free music archive, is another great place to find some great music for the low, low price of give the artist some credit if you use their stuff. So that's what I'm doing now. Daydreaming by Starman65. Good stuff. I'm really loving this track. I've actually been listening to it as I put this show together. So, yeah, check that out. There will be links in the show notes, not only to this one, but to Fairy Tale, which you heard earlier in the show, also by Starman65. I found that one, and then I just kind of clicked play on all of the things, and it was pretty awesome. As always, the opening track is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita, which you can find on the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. Two great places for great tunes, great, just good stuff, things you'll never have heard before. Go to either. I don't even care which. Pick one at random and then just start pressing play. I bet you you find something you like. We are hosted by archive.org, the Internet Archive, which is stupendous in the work that they are doing to save, preserve, and quite literally archive all the really cool stuff on the internet. So big shout out to them. Big thank you to all of their work that they do. Archive.org, the Internet Archive, great people doing some really great things. If you want to get in touch with me, well, you certainly can. You can drop a link or a comment in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Or if you prefer the more traditional methods of getting a hold of me, there is always the email route, which is cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Drop me a line and let me know if you've got an idea, comment, question, whatever. That is what I am here for. You can also hit me up on Twitter. I am @Bibrarian. That's Bibrarian. It's kind of like librarian, but it starts with a B. Or Google Plus. I am google.com/plus Daniel Messer. Hit me up, you know, if you got questions, comments, want to see something or want to hear something later on in the show, that's great. That's what I love to hear. And with that, I think we are about done here. I am going to be moving, my lovelies, so I don't think there will be any interruption in the show schedule. We do this every 2 weeks, and I think that'll be just fine. I'm moving next week, and everything should be ready by the week after that. Oh boy, I hope that things will be ready for the week after that. This is my 7th move. That's not even an exaggeration, but we bought a house. And the only bad thing about buying a house, besides the massive outlay of money, is that you have to move to that house. So, yeah. I'll be doing that. I'll be taking lots of pain pills. And I'll be waiting for the next time I sit down in front of the microphone, talking to you, and, you know, hoping that you tune in for that too. In the meantime, you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care. See you around.